Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
A 49-year-old woman is struck and killed by a truck. Utah attorneys are appealing the payment of a $5.5 million debt, and education was a hot topic at the Capitol today. Details during our legislative coverage.
Today is Tuesday, March 6th. It's All Things Considered. I'm Tom Williams.
And I'm Mackenzie Hamilton. This is your 5:30 Utah News.
A 49-year-old woman is dead after she was struck by a truck while standing on a Provo sidewalk with her friends. Carrie Bringhurst has details.
Authorities say Madeline Charrington of Provo died of her injuries shortly after the accident that happened around 5 o'clock Monday afternoon. Police say a Ford pickup was traveling eastbound on Center Street in Provo, attempting to make a left turn when it pulled directly in front of a westbound Jeep. That Jeep then T-boned the truck, pushing it toward Charrington and three of her friends. The three others moved out of the way, but Charrington was struck by the vehicle. Paramedics performed CPR at the scene. Charrington was taken to Utah Valley Regional Medical Center, where she later died. Two drivers were also transported to the hospital for treatment. Reporting for Utah Public Radio News, I'm Carrie Bringhurst.
Maryland prosecutors have dismissed murder charges against two out-of-state doctors in the death of a fetus during a 2010 procedure, citing conflicts in expert testimony. Cecil County State's Attorney Ellis Rollins says the investigation against Dr. Stevens Brigham of New Jersey and Nicola Riley of Utah remains open.
The Utah Attorney General's office has appealed a judge's order to pay off more than $5.5 million in debt incurred by managers of a communal land trust once run by jailed polygamous sex leader Warren Jeffs. UPR's Ashley Tolman has details.
In a petition filed today with the Utah Supreme Court, state attorneys argue that a judge's ruling in February, giving the state 90 days to pay the debts, demands payment in a time and under terms that would make it impossible for Utah's attorney general to comply. The money is owed to a Salt Lake City accountant and others who assisted with management of the United Effort Plan Trust, the $114 million communal property of Just Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Utah, Arizona, and British Columbia. Reporting for Utah Public Radio, I'm Ashley Tolman.
Lawyers for the father-in-law of missing Utah woman Susan Powell are trying to suppress evidence seized from his home last summer. Steve Powell is set to face trial later this month on charges of voyeurism and child pornography. Investigators said that when they searched his home last fall looking for evidence of Susan Powell's disappearance, they found images of women who had been unknowingly photographed and of two neighbor girls taking baths. In a new motion, attorney Mark Quigley is asking a judge to throw out a compact photo disc recovered from a locked compartment in his bedroom. Quigley says the police were looking for copies of Susan Powell's journals, but they had no reason to believe the journals would contain any evidence of a crime. Pierce County Prosecutor Mark Lindquist says the search was done meticulously. Susan Powell's husband, Josh, killed himself and their two children in a fire at his rental home last month.
The Utah Supreme Court is set to hear arguments over whether Governor Gary Herbert and other state office holders can use a political action committee to raise campaign money. UPR's Luke Ensign reports.
A critic of campaign financing argues that Herbert has used a political action committee to avoid the monthly reporting requirements of a regular campaign account, making it harder for people to track donors. Steve Maxfield filed the complaint in 2010, hoping to bounce Herbert from the ballot. He didn't succeed. At issue is a Utah law that says candidates can raise money only through a regular campaign account, but another state law lets political action committees raise and transfer money to candidates. Many political figures in Utah finance their campaigns both ways. Maxfield contends that's illegal. This is Luke Ensign with Utah Public Radio.
And in southern Utah, hikers hoping to grab a last-minute permit to visit the Slot Canyons of Zion National Park can now use an online reservation system instead of standing in line for hours. Zion says hikers surveyed about wilderness permit procedures asked for the change last fall. Park officials previously required hikers to wait in line for hours early in the morning for the chance to obtain a last-minute permit for the Narrows, Subway, or Mystery Canyon. The change took place last week. Hikers can sign up for a permit as early as 3 months before they plan an outing. Any leftover slots will now be awarded by lottery, and winners will be notified by email.
We turn to legislative coverage, as always, in this last week of the legislative session. A bill that ties both pay and continued employment of teachers and school administrators to the result of yearly performance evaluations passed the Utah House of Representatives in a nearly unanimous vote. The bill's House sponsor, Republican Representative Francis Gibson, says it encourages excellence from the top down, which will improve the education system for Utah's children.
So not only are our administrators going to be evaluated every year, but we want to insist that they are doing annual evaluations on their teachers to find out who is meeting the goals and guidelines set by the district and the parents and the expectations.
The bill has the support of teachers and education leaders. Democratic Representative Carol Spackman Moss applauded Republican Senator Aaron Osmond for consulting those who would be affected when drafting the legislation.
The difference in the way teachers who are on the front lines every day with our kids respond to this kind of respect and this kind of collaboration is very clear. Teachers are willing to have reform. They just want to have a voice at the table.
Senate Bill 64 passed the House by a vote of 73-1. It now goes back to the Senate for approval of an amendment. If approved, the bill will go to Governor Gary Herbert for his signature.
A resolution urging the State Board of Education to thoroughly evaluate its adoption of the Common Core standards developed by several states is now asking them to reconsider that decision. KCBW's Whitney Evans reports.
Republican Senator Aaron Osmond says he's had strong influence from the governor and other senators to strengthen the language of Senate Concurrent Resolution 13, but adds this is not an outright rejection of the Common Core.
Even though this was a state-led initiative, the federal government is reaching and trying to take control of this from our perspective. The letter from the State Board of Education clearly articulates, though, their right to push back and to back out if that happens.
But Democratic Senator Karen Morgan, who also sits on the Senate Education Committee, says the Common Core is being distorted.
It isn't a federal mandate. It isn't coming down from the federal government. This is something that the state has worked with other states on. The Common Core is not being portrayed as it is.
State Superintendent Larry Shumway tells KCPW the Common Core standards are right for Utah students, and he was under the impression that the governor agreed.
So I'm troubled by the resolution.
Allie Isom, spokeswoman for Governor Gary Herbert, says the governor supports the resolution, noting he's confident that given the opportunity to evaluate the Common Core standards, the state will find it's better than federal standards.
He has not in any way recanted his previous support for the Common Core, but he does see that this bill allows a formalization of a process to validate the Common Core.
Much of the language in Senate Concurrent Resolution 13 comes from the American Legislative Exchange Council, a conservative nationwide organization that creates model legislation. However, Osmond says modifications have been made specifically. From KCPW News in Salt Lake City, I'm Whitney Evans for Utah Public Radio.
A state lawmaker whose bill was initially opposed by law enforcement says he's getting more support after making some changes. Republican Representative Paul Ray has been fighting for weeks to get police agencies to sign off on House Bill 49, which would prevent gun owners from being cited for openly carrying in public, provided they aren't acting in a threatening way. Ray says with recent tweaks, law enforcement agencies are still not endorsing his bill, but they aren't opposing it either.
It still basically says what I wanted it to, is that you can't give somebody a ticket merely for carrying a gun, but it also, you know, makes it a point that law enforcement does have the ability to do an attitude check on somebody, that they can come up to you and say, hey, you know, what's your intent? You're open carrying, you're spooking people, what's the deal? You know, what's going on here?
The bill already passed out of the House and is waiting to be heard on the Senate floor, where Ray says the amendment will be introduced.
And as always, we have weather from the Utah Climate Center, and meteorologist Martin Schrader is here with us. Looks like the forecast and the weather is taking a turn.
That's right. Wet, windy, and cold are the adjectives of the day, as a strong storm system will influence a large portion of the state overnight. So be careful and drive safe on your commute home.
And that is the 5:30 News. I'm Tom Williams.
And I'm Mackenzie Hamilton. Thank you for joining us.